Hey, it's Boxer.
And I'm Sarah Towns with Experience Columbus.
Did you know Columbus is home to the number one science museum in the country?
Ranked number 7 on Food & Wine's list of America's next great food cities?
And one of Condé Nast Traveler's top 10 best big cities in America?
Yes, Columbus. An Experience Columbus podcast keeps you in the know about what's happening in the Arch City.
Binge, listen to all the current episodes.
Or catch up on all things Columbus and discover what makes this city so special.
By the end, you'll be asking yourself, can all of this really exist in one city?
Yes, Columbus.
If you're a smoker or vapor ready to make a change, you really only need one good reason. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you'll discover many good reasons. Zyn is America's number one nicotine pouch brand. Plus, Zyn offers a robust rewards program. There are lots of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Check out Zyn.com/find to find Zyn at a store near you. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Welcome, everyone, to F1 Nation's review of the Las Vegas Grand Prix. I'm Tom Clarkson, and joining me on the show is F1 correspondent and presenter Lawrence Barreto. Now, get this. We're sitting outside the McLaren hospitality unit in the Vegas paddock. The entire F1 press corps is surrounding us. And the team is currently absorbing the news that both of its cars have been disqualified from the race. This is huge news for so many reasons. And Lawrence, why? Why has Lando Norris lost P2 and Oscar Piastri P4?
Well, Tom, McLaren was summoned to the stewards just after the race because the rear skids of both Lando and Oscar's car were found to be below the minimum thickness level, which is 9 millimetres. Now, there's precedent for this. I think earlier in the year, Lewis Hamilton was disqualified in China. Nico Hülkenberg was disqualified in Bahrain. Now, McLaren took a case to the FIA to try and appeal the penalty. They argued that there were mitigating circumstances that were additional and unexpected porpoising at the event. They said there was limited opportunity to test due to the weather on day one. Do you remember it was raining and we kind of had those really slippery conditions? And then we had the shortened practice sessions as well, which meant the teams couldn't do the long runs and therefore test the ride heights and see how low they'd want to run the cars. Now, the FIA responded and they said in a statement, unfortunately, there was no provision in the regulation or precedent for any penalty other than the usual penalty, i.e. disqualification. Among all of this, the FIA did say that they didn't feel that McLaren ever intentionally attempted to breach the regulations. But because there is no other precedent other than a disqualification, that's the only penalty that they could give. Now, McLaren added that there was the potential accidental damage that may have led to movement of the floor, which could have caused this additional wear. But the FIA threw that out and said there wasn't sufficient evidence to mitigate the penalty. And that means, ultimately, the penalty stands. Both McLarens have been disqualified from the Las Vegas Grand Prix.
For the neutral, they must be loving this. For McLaren, Lawrence,
it's a nightmare for McLaren because obviously Lando, he was 30 points clear at the checkered flag. Oscar was 30 points behind. Max was well away from the championship lead. And now we've got both drivers, both Oscar Piastri and Max Verstappen, on 24 points adrift of Lando Norris within a race win with two races and a sprint to go.
The question is why, and I guess it has been a very disrupted weekend here in Vegas, hasn't it? In terms of, you know, the practice sessions, there were red flags, and I think Lando said that prior to qualifying, he'd only done four. The longest stint he'd done in any practice session in the dry was four laps. Okay, and then of course qualifying was wet, bowled another googly at the teams as well. So it kind of was a big step into the unknown going into this race from a setup point of view, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And let's just say that that is, of course, the same for all the teams. So it's not like any other team had any long run data. I think the difference here with McLaren is they've come here knowing they've never finished higher than sixth in quali, never finished higher than sixth in the race, and that they wanted to make a big step forward here. So I think when you're pushing the limits, maybe they just pushed it a little bit too far, and they would have learned that in practice had they had those long runs, but they didn't. And that is the nature of when you've got a championship coming down to the wire. Even though McLaren have been so dominant this year, it shows how hard these guys have to push the absolute limit to ensure that they can keep Max Verstappen and Red Bull behind.
Do you know, in the post-race press conference, I did ask Lando, I said, look, do you dare to dream? You've got to, you know, you've got surely one hand on this World Championship trophy. And to be fair to him, he said, absolutely not. I'm not thinking like that. I'm going to go to Qatar purely with the view of trying to win that race, take it one step at a time. So I'm not sure it's going to change his attitude. Or do you think the pressure is higher now as we go into these last two race weekends?
No, I think from a Lando perspective, I think the one thing that's really impressed me in these last few rounds is the way he's dealing with this pressure. And his lead was 30 points. It's now 24 points. But the way he is performing, I think, and the way that he is handling that stress and that pressure will be enough to carry him into Qatar and put this behind him quite quickly. I think the Lando of maybe earlier in this year or years gone by might have maybe let it get to him, and it might have affected him and send him into a spiral, but maybe had a bad effect on that following weekend. Whereas now, I think the Lando that we've got now is mentally tough. And I think that is what will hopefully carry him into Qatar without it affecting him too much.
What about for Piastri, though? Let's just finish talking about McLaren. He's now level with Max Verstappen. Did you see progress from Piastri this weekend, just in terms of his pace, in terms of his consistency?
Yeah, absolutely. I think without that yellow flag in qualifying, he would have been much higher up the grid. You know, Leclerc obviously had that moment. He couldn't complete his lap, Oscar, that is. And I think he would have been much higher. And he built up through the weekend. And honestly, talking to him on camera and off camera, he was feeling much happier about things. Like, he's not back to that peak Oscar nailing it, utter confidence in the car, but he felt like he was back in the fight and it wouldn't be just another case of damage limitation. I think there was real frustration in the race that obviously starting from P5, fell back, clawed those positions back. But I think that actually the way he handled this race showed that he has got the pace again. I think that he's found something in the car that gives him that confidence. And actually going into Qatar, on paper, yeah, okay, he's level with Max Verstappen, and that's never ideal when you've got a driver of that quality. But he's actually closer to Lando than he would have been without this disqualification, ironically. So actually on paper, it isn't so bad for Oscar heading to Qatar, where he is brilliant. He's never been beaten by Lando. He is the favourite, I would have said this before this weekend, in the sprint and in the race. And so I think actually he's probably going to take a little bit of a boost from what's happened this weekend.
They were the favourites going into Qatar last year and Max Verstappen stole it. Let's talk about Max now. I mean, how good was he in this race, first of all?
He was brilliant. I mean, I think he took advantage at the start. Lando made a move he described as shocking as he cut across. Max got ahead and then he commanded that race. I think every time it felt like there was a threat from behind, first from George and then from Lando, he was able to pull out a gap and pull out at will. You know, he would set a fastest lap, so not just a gap. And I think it was really interesting, towards the end of that race, he was still delivering fastest laps. It was almost like he was trying to send them a sign. You know, Lando was having an issue towards the end of the race. He was falling back. And it was clear that Max wasn't going to be challenged. But Max was almost like, and even though publicly he was saying, even before what's happened with the disqualification, oh, look, I'm not thinking about the championship, I just want to win races. The brilliance about Max is he looks to get any kind of edge over any other driver or team that he can. And I think even just the way he was smashing fastest laps after fastest laps in that race, at a track where it wasn't immediately clear they were going to be the best, because, you know, many felt Mercedes were going to be strong coming in here. McLaren had shown they'd made a step here. Ferrari are normally good here. For Max to do the kind of job that he did in that race, it was more than just about winning this race. It was about stamping a massive authority on it, just to keep the pressure on Lando and Oscar headed into these last races.
Fastest lap of the race on the very last lap.
Exactly.
On tyres that had done half the race. Do you think he's still living rent-free in Lando's head? And I'm referring to the tussle going into turn one.
I think Lando, it was a couple of years ago, was it the first year that Max did a really good move down the inside there? So I'm sure that would have been on Lando's mind. But I think actually the very fact that Lando was, he won't like this word, but it was aggressive in the way that he kind of cut across the track, shows that actually, no, I don't think he is living rent-free anymore. I just think he was thinking, look, I'm going to try and own this. It didn't work out, admittedly, but at least Lando was trying to own it. And so I think, for me, that means that maybe he's starting to get on top of it. I do think that Max still has the edge over him, because we haven't seen for a while now, Lando come out on top in a battle with Max. But I do think that that was actually an example of him really kind of showing Max that he won't be pushed around and he's going for this and he wants this title and he's not going to let anyone try and take it away from him.
You know what? If Lando Norris goes on to win this world championship, I actually think the disqualification here sort of helps in a funny kind of way, because now the tempo has shifted going into these last two races. Just look, you and I talking about it, everything that's been written about the disqualification as well, the pressure has ramped up, right? We've got 2 weekends. In 2 weeks' time, Lawrence, you and I will be sat in Abu Dhabi discussing who is world champion, right? The pressure has ramped up. Max Verstappen is one of the best drivers we've ever seen in Formula One. He's got his mojo. We were just watching him walking up and down after the press conference, chatting to the media. He's oozing confidence. He knows the rule book inside out. He leaves no stone unturned. And I think you want to beat Max Verstappen on level terms, right? To prove you're the best. And I think Lando is almost having to do this now, which will give just that little bit more meaning, if that's the right word, to what he's going to hopefully, for him, go on and achieve.
And I think that's a really good point, because I think it will mean a lot to Lando to do that. I don't think he ever wants to be gifted anything. I don't think it's important to him to just win a world championship at any cost. I think to be able to beat Max isn't just about what happens this year and whatever results this. It's the future, because these two guys, and Oscar included, can be fighting for world championships for the next decade. So it's all about tone setting. And I think Lando really gets that. And it's not just about winning that championship in whatever way he can do. And so I think that's a really good point, Tom.
And you know how you're saying Max wanted to send a message to McLaren by dominating this race. I got that vibe from Lando in qualifying, actually. I thought that final lap in Q3 was sublime until he made that mistake with a couple of corners to go. But I mean, you know, that was as good a qualifying lap until that moment as I think we've ever seen from Lando.
Actually, it reminded me of many laps we've seen Max deliver in those real, like, tight moments. I remember there was one in Singapore that was, it was incredible. And I think Lando was, what, nearly a second up, I think, after two sectors. And yeah, okay, he had the mistake, but it was a mistake that didn't cost him. And that is what's changed with Lando, is that I think he's made mistakes over the last couple of years in qualifying when he's under pressure, and it's cost him several places and meant he couldn't go and fight for the win. Yesterday, he'd done such a good job in those first two sectors that actually it didn't matter what he did then, and he still caught it, and he didn't put it in the wall, he didn't lose control. And I think he's taken so much confidence from that. I think Lando's taken so much confidence from this weekend as a whole. He said from the very first lap he did in practice, he knew they were going to be better here. Whether or not that is completely true in reality, I don't know, but he said it publicly. He doesn't normally do that. And I think, so again, we're back to messages and tones and setting the tones and stuff. But I think the job that he's doing here, the advantage he's had over Oscar still at another very different track, I think was another tone setting, message sending thing from Lando. And I think he'll go away from this weekend thinking, I've just done the best job possible again on a circuit that McLaren haven't been strong at. So the disqualification aside, they didn't cheat, by the way. You know, they didn't go out to try and get an advantage. This is just the nature of what happens when you don't get practice running. He'll just think, we've done a great job here, and we've stepped it up, and I've done the best job of the two McLaren drivers. I think he's going to take so much confidence from this, yeah, especially the way he's handled it with Max.
And that quali in the rain, this racetrack in the rain, in the cold, it was Bambi on ice territory, and he was the guy in qualifying.
I really don't think in all my time in Formula 1 I've seen a qualifying session as difficult as that. No one really made any massive mistakes, did they? It was just little wiggles, a little driver elements of control, and they all mostly caught it. And I think that's what made it so special, that session, and that Lando came out on top in that when often he doesn't, I think is significant.
So let me reiterate what the new point situation is after these two McLaren disqualifications. Norris is still leading on 390 points, with Piastri and Verstappen tied in P2 on 366. So that's 24 points behind Lando. It's all to play for, Lawrence. Who's favourite? I mean, I think it has to be Lando still, because he's got that 24-point margin.
And he's got the form, I get it. But this is Max Verstappen that we're talking about. And for half this season, he shouldn't have been a contender. And we saw as soon as he got that Red Bull, after Monza, he got that Red Bull in a state where he knew he could compete, The light came back in his eyes, that cheeky smirk came back, and suddenly we were seeing Max at the best we've ever seen him. And that is such a scary thing, heading into a title decider in two races, when he's going up against two guys who have not fought title deciders at the death. And that must give him a slight advantage mentally. Yes, of course, Lando's got the points advantage, but Max, oh my word, he'll go to sleep so well tonight.
This episode is sponsored by Aura Frames. One of the hardest parts about being far from family is missing the little things. A niece's new haircut, a cousin's wedding, your kid that's away studying, or a silly selfie from your mum or dad that brightens your day. And that's why I love Aura Frames. It helps you feel connected even when you're miles apart. And it makes such a good gift because it's not just thoughtful, it's also smart. You can personalize it before it ships, add a message, and preload it with your favorite photos so that the moment they unwrap it, it already feels full of life. They can then upload unlimited photos and videos to the frame from anywhere, anytime, just using the Aura app, or you can add contributors so they can do the same. I'm waiting to give mine to the family at Christmas, and I'm already thinking of sneaking a few paddock pictures into ours during next year's races. It's the kind of present that doesn't just sit on a shelf. It brings people together, because you can't wrap togetherness, but you can frame it. For a limited time, visit AuraFrames.com and get $45 off Aura's best-selling Carver Mat Frames, named number one by Wirecutter, by using the code NATION at checkout. That's Aura, A-U-R-A, Frames.com, promo code NATION. This exclusive Black Friday Cyber Monday deal is their best of the year, so order now before it ends. And support our show by mentioning us at checkout.
If you're a smoker or vapor ready to make a change, you really only need one good reason. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you'll discover many good reasons. Zyn is America's number one nicotine pouch brand. Plus, Zyn offers a robust rewards program. There are lots of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Check out Zyn.com/find to find Zyn at a store near you. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
So if McLaren is the big story, there are, of course, lots of other things to talk about in this Grand Prix. We need to remind people. And I mean, let's start with Mercedes, right? Who, at the checkered flag, were third and fifth. But of course, with the McLaren disqualifications, have now got a double podium. Russell in second and Antonelli in third. Let's talk about both of those guys, Lawrence. Let's start with Russell. He was dealing with issues in the race, wasn't he? Did you find out what they were?
Yeah, so it's the repeat of the steering issue that he had in qualifying. He tried to go into a little bit of detail, just saying it was unpredictable. You know, at some points it would just lock a little bit. But he did say that he found a way to drive around it. So fair play to him for doing that. But obviously that cost him. And then he went a little bit too hard on the tyres. The grain and face came through and he just obviously just fell back. But on top of all of that, the fact that he still delivered an incredible performance to get that podium shot, the way he handled the start, this was another vintage George Russell performance. Super impressed by him.
And what about that man Antonelli? I mean, on the podium last time out in Brazil, I kind of feel, Lawrence, that when I now get what Toto's been going on about for the last 12 months.
I think so. I think Toto will be delighted with the way that Kimi has come through, because I think there was that moment when Toto said he was underwhelming, you know, in Monza. And it could have gone one of two ways. Kimi could have buckled under the pressure, or he could go on the kind of run he has gone on to. And Mercedes bet on that, because they would have seen how he came through go-kart. And I was talking to Gwen LeGroux about, you know, his carded days actually this weekend, and how he saw that Kimi was special. And I think today was another example of just what makes Kimi a frighteningly good prospect, not just for the next few years, but for the next decade. The way that he handled yesterday's bad day of qualifying, having been so frighteningly fast in practice, and then the way he cut through today, he had that 5-second time penalty, which often we can often hear drivers get so frustrated with on the radio. None of that. Like, he just had head down and he did the best with a fast car. And okay, of course, he wasn't expecting a podium at the end of it, you know, after this double disqualification. But to claw back to what was fifth at the flag, after such a strong weekend in Brazil, shows that actually, for me, this was a better weekend for him.
Better than Brazil?
I think so, because it's the way he's handled a difficult scenario. I think the Kimi from earlier in the season, after that difficult day in quali, might have got a bit lost today, might have pushed too hard, maybe overdriven the car, might have kissed the wall a couple of times, but there was none of that today. If you looked at the way Kimi drove today's race, you would not have known he had a bad day yesterday. You would have not known there was any frustration. And I think that is what's so impressive about what he did today.
And he's a tyre whisperer, isn't he? I was expecting him to make another pit stop in that race, and yet he nursed those tyres and you know, beat Oscar Piastri.
Even surprised himself, actually, with that, because he wasn't sure whether or not the tyres were going to last. But I think the very fact that he was able to do it in a way that no one else was, you know, the way that he nursed that tyres, it's kind of Sergio Perez-esque, isn't it? The way that he's able to feel it. So, yeah, fair play to him.
I'd like to know what was said in this big meeting that he had back in Brackley after the Italian Grand Prix. So as you referenced Toto saying he was underwhelming in that race, they all went back to Brackley. And to quote Kimi, we had a big meeting. I want to know what was said in that meeting, because I feel that had a huge influence in the Kimi that we're now seeing.
Oh, I'd love to know specifically what was said. But what I do know is that it was a really tough meeting. They weren't placating him at all. They were just very brutal and honest about the areas that he was making, where he could be stronger, where he maybe needed to put more of his focus. And I think the thing that I've always been impressed with Kimi coming through the junior formulae, is that he doesn't need to be told twice. And I think what that meeting was a crunch meeting where they just needed to say, look, Kimi, you're doing a great job. We know you're good, but this is where you need to improve and you need to go and do this, that, and the other. And it's about the way he changes his approach to a race weekend, the way that he doesn't get tired. Because earlier in the year, he was doing quite a lot of promotional events. He was also maybe getting a bit caught up in the moment, you know, especially in his two home races in Italy. And it was taking a lot of a toll on him. And I think he realised that, but he couldn't quite realise how to adjust to that. So that's just one example of one thing that they could do. And look, Mercedes know him so well. He knows Mercedes so well. They are so good at working out an efficient checklist of things that you need to do. And I think they think that Kimi was ready to handle that. And I think what's really impressive is he hasn't made a single mistake since. And I'm talking about in practice, in qualifying, in the race. I'm not talking about like driver error. Of course, you can maybe lose the car because you're pushing too hard. But he hasn't overdriven the car. He hasn't done anything that he shouldn't have done. And I think that's what Mercedes were hoping he would do. And that's what he's been able to achieve.
It smacks of that mind management that Jackie Stewart's always talked about. It's as if that meeting after Monza was the moment where he suddenly got it and was able to compartmentalise all the different aspects you need to be a top Formula One driver. Helped by Bono, of course, his race engineer. But now, look, Mercedes are on a roll. You know, they had a strong weekend last time out. Another strong weekend here. It wasn't as strong in Vegas this year as it was last year. George Russell dominating from pole in 2024. Do you think they're feeling disappointed, or actually will they take the fact that this year's car is more consistent and so they've had greater consistency over the year, but perhaps the peaks like they had in Vegas last year haven't been there?
Yeah, so I asked that to George in the TV pen and he said they'll take the consistent car because it's more points. And that is the stark reality, isn't it? Yeah, okay, they had the highs. And look, they've still had highs this year. But I think it's been much better for them and actually for Kimi as the year's gone on that they've had a more consistent car from one race to another. Because not only has it allowed them to build a rhythm through the year, but I think it just gives the team a better understanding of what kind of package that they've got. They're not kind of shifting wildly from one side to the other. They're not making very much dramatic changes with the setup. Do you remember sometimes last year with Lewis, they knew what they were doing. They'd go to the far end of the spectrum with a setup just to try and understand it. They haven't had to do that this year, and that's allowed them to have a much more consistent weekend through from Friday into Sunday. And that's what's basically earned them P2 in the constructors. Obviously it's not done yet, but they are tightening their grip on that as Red Bull and Ferrari are falling away.
Well, I feel that's a segue into talking about Ferrari, talking about consistency and the lack of it at Ferrari. This has been another difficult weekend for the team, and you know, coming into this race, a lot of people thought this would be their last opportunity to get a good result this year. Yet even with the McLaren disqualifications, they're only fourth and eighth at the flag.
This was tough. Lewis described Brazil as a nightmare. Today he described it to me as horrendous.
What's John Elkin, the boss at Ferrari, going to make of that?
It's going to be difficult, isn't it, to swallow. Even more difficult to swallow for, you know, the boys and girls who work on the car day in, day out to try and do the best. I think there's a couple of things here to deal with for Ferrari. I think there was their performance in the wet yesterday in quali. I thought it was significant that Charles Leclerc pointed out specifically that he said since he's joined the team, so that was back in 2019, the team have not understood how to make their car go fast. You know, whatever type of car they'd built that year, they've never understood what it takes to get faster. They've turned the car upside down, he said. They've had Lewis Hamilton join the team, a wet weather master. They've had Carlos Sainz before, a wet weather master. They've tried everything and they can't make this car go fast. And he said that is top of his checklist now going forward, is to try and understand why they can't do it. Because what it meant was today in dry conditions, even though they were fast, well, at least with Charles Leclerc's car, they couldn't fight for anything because they were too far back. And I think it was just, it's another example of why Ferrari, there's so much goodness there. They just can't seem to piece it all together to make the most out of it.
And dealing with Lewis specifically, right, this was the first time in his Formula One career that he'd qualified last without an issue, you know, without a grid penalty or something like that. This was a performance-based P20.
He was so downbeat in the TV pen yesterday when I spoke to him. And look, he's had some really tough weekends this year, but I think Lewis is such a proud guy. Like, he really takes racing seriously. So it's hurtful. It's almost embarrassing for him to finish that low when he is doing everything he can to do the best job possible. But I think it shows just how difficult that car is to drive at the minute to get the very best out of it. Clearly, Charles has a way with that machine, but don't forget he's been there since 2019. He knows maybe a lot of the workarounds you might have to do to get the pace out of the car. Lewis doesn't have any of those kind of cheat codes almost to try and get the best out of it, and it's getting frustrating. It's similar to when he was at Mercedes and he was starting to realize that there was nothing he could really do with that car in, you know, the generation that it had developed. So it was tough to see him there. Then we saw this early phase of the race where, you know, helped by the crashes at turn one, he was able to make up a couple of paces. I think he went up 7 spots from where he started off the grid. That phase looked all right. But then thereafter, he just couldn't make any progress. Yeah, OK, there's a little bit of damage that he got when Alex Albon clipped him. But it wasn't, or it shouldn't have been significant enough to really hold him back in the way that Charles Leclerc was able to actually make progress, wasn't he? He was able to pressurize Oscar. He was able to...
Yeah, driving like an animal, he said. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's what maybe might be more concerning for Lewis in reality, is that, you know, Charles is able to get more out of a difficult car at the minute than Lewis was, which is strange because Lewis was on a really great run from Spa. It felt like he was turning a corner, and this was a bit of a setback, I think, that qualifying performance for him.
That qualifying was confusing because actually he was perfectly placed to get the track conditions when they were at their absolute best. At the end of Q1, he crossed the line, I think, with 2 seconds to spare. And yet he backed off because he thought he hadn't made it. So either there's a miscommunication with Ricky, his race engineer, or I can't imagine what other excuse there might be. But to not know that you'd actually made it and could complete the lap seems extraordinary to me.
And particularly frustrating because actually he was pretty strong in Friday practice. That's not the first time this year that we've seen a miscommunication like this.
Now, yeah, but this is race 22. I'd forgive them at race 1, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, Tom. Like, they've had a number of races to get together, but I think Ferrari is a different beast. And for a driver to come into that team and kind of net build it around them in the way that, you know, Fernando Alonso tried and Sebastian Vettel tried, it's difficult. And I still don't think we should overlook that. I appreciate it has been over 20 races, but if it doesn't gel, it doesn't gel. And sometimes you have to work harder to make it gel. And it just feels like that's where they're at the minute. Ricky is a great race engineer. We know that. We've seen that from past. Lewis is a great driver. So it just might be at the minute something isn't quite clicking properly.
Hey, it's Boxer.
And I'm Sarah Towns with Experience Columbus.
Did you know Columbus is home to the number one science museum in the country?
Ranked number 7 on Food & Wine's list of America's next great food cities.
And one of Condé Nast Traveler's top 10 best big cities in America.
Yes, Columbus. An Experience Columbus podcast keeps you in the know about what's happening in the Arch City.
Binge, listen to all the current episodes.
Or catch up on all things Columbus and discover what makes this city so special.
By the end, you'll be asking yourself, can all of this really exist in one city?
Yes, Columbus.
If you're a smoker or vapor ready to make a change, you really only need one good reason. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you'll discover many good reasons. Zyn is America's number one nicotine pouch brand. Plus, Zyn offers a robust rewards program. There are lots of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Check out Zyn.com/find to find Zyn at a store near you. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
There's more to come from Vegas in a moment, but I just wanted to let you know about the other official F1 podcast you can listen to this week. Sebastian Vettel is my guest on F1 Beyond the Grid. That's out on Wednesday, and you can watch our chat on the official F1 YouTube channel. And this week's F1 Explains is all about Ford's return to Formula One with Red Bull Racing in 2026. That's out on Friday. Just search for F1 Beyond the Grid and F1 Explains on your podcast app. Well, Lawrence, it's been brilliant, brilliant to sort of break down this breaking news that we've had after the race, but also to talk about everything else that's going on. Can we end this the traditional way? All right. Driver of the day, give us a few others as well. You don't limit it to one, but I mean, who impressed you apart from the McLarens, the Ferraris and the Red Bulls that we've already discussed?
Easy. It's Carlos Sainz. I think, you know, his lap yesterday to get P3 was outstanding.
And he was on it all the way through quali as well, wasn't it? It wasn't one last lap. He was there or thereabouts the whole way.
No, and so from that basis, it was performance. It was pure driver performance that got him that lap. You know, to your point, there was no better conditions, worse conditions. He was quick throughout. I think the way he handled the start was impressive. I think the way that he was sensible enough to realise where his fight was. You know, there were a lot of faster cars around him. That's their first score since Singapore in the Grand Prix format. So these points are significant for the team. P7, they were comfortably the best midfield team. I think it was a very sensible, Sainz-esque drive. And look, he could have fought harder maybe to get P5 or P6. And he probably realised that the podium was out. You know, it wasn't maybe going to be another Baku. But I think that shows the smartness of Carlos Sainz. And I think it was super important for the team to get that result because it's been difficult for them. They've shown that they've had the pace to score consistently over the last 5 rounds. But then on one side of the garage, Alex Albon hasn't scored in a Grand Prix format for 6 races now. Carlos has obviously had, you know, that podium in Baku, but they haven't really taken home the points they should have done in Austin and in Mexico. So I think it was just important for them to nail a really good result. So I think he deserves a lot of plaudits today for a great drive. I think Isaac Hadjar did a great job. Lots of people are talking about him probably going to be getting the Red Bull seat. It's just another example of why he deserves to get that seat if that's what they decide to do. Nico Hülkenberg, you know, they've scored again, only a few points, but I think it shows that even on a bad day yesterday when you just missed out in qualifying, that experience, that's what Sauber are paying for in Audi from next year. Another great drive. This is what was brilliant about this race, Tom, is that there were loads of standout drives. I really feel like everyone inside the top 10 fought for it and really deserved it.
Do you know who it was nice to see back as well? Was Esteban Ocon. I felt he had a few quiet races. Well, you know, for the last few races, we've been talking a lot about Ollie Bearman, haven't we? Who's been, you know, ripping up trees. He's been doing such a good job. But and Ocon was slightly in his shadow, whereas I felt this race, it was as good as we've seen him this year anyway.
I felt for him a little bit because I think Esteban's done a good job at Haas this year. He just hasn't got a lot of consistent results. It's been very up and down. Whereas Ollie's had, four great results, including a sixth and a fourth. And it was a classic Esteban performance this year. You know, they ran long. He tried to look after the tyres. He tried to do something different. And it just didn't come out at the end of it. And he said in the TV pen, oh, maybe I should have pushed, you know, to defend harder from Lewis. But I think the very fact that he was saying things like that, that he wasn't too downbeat, shows that he knows that he did a good job, potentially the best job he could have done for Haas today. And I think it would do wonders for his confidence that he beat Ollie, you know, because that's the reality of it. That's what makes it important.
And with the two McLaren disqualifications, the Haases finish 9th and 10th. And that actually has ramifications in the Constructors' Championship, because they have now passed Aston Martin for P7. That's been a great day's work.
And also, that will give them a ton of confidence in the fact that they committed to that upgrade for Austin. So
absolutely,
they were one of the few midfield teams to really throw their weight behind that. And it's, well, for now, it's paying off. That is a lot of money that can be spent on next year's car. And I think that is significant.
Right. Brilliant resume. We've listed a whole bunch of drivers there. We're each now going to give one driver as our driver of the day. Is Sainz still your man?
No, I think it's close. I think Kimi Antonelli, for me. I think the way he handled that race, from the bad qualifying yesterday to coming through to utilising that pace. Can you imagine what he could have done if he was P3 or P4 on the grid? He could have fought for the win. That was outstanding for me. Just edges it off Sainz, I think.
Damn you, Lawrence. I was going to say him, but I'll say
sorry.
But I'll say someone else. Look, I mean, we did lots of this last year, and particularly in 2023 when Max won all of those races, where because he was so dominant, we didn't give him enough driver of the day plaudits. And I'm actually going to say Max Verstappen, all right? His 6th win of the season, fastest lap on the last lap to just ram home his dominance. It was as good a race as we've ever seen from Max. So he's my man.
Massive respect. There we go. I think Kimi, Max, very fair driver of the days.
Well, Lawrence, thank you as ever. Brilliant to have you on the show. And hey, 2 weeks' time in Abu, can we have you back? And we're going to discuss who the 2025 world champion is going to be.
Absolutely. You know what? I wasn't sure at the start of the season if we would ever be able to consider dream of ending up in Abu Dhabi with a championship designer. It doesn't matter if it doesn't get to that, Tom, because we have had a heck of a championship and we're getting a finale that it deserves, I think.
Safe travels. Thanks again for your time. See you soon.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Now to F1 Academy and the crowning of a new champion here in Las Vegas.
Dorian Pan has won the championship. She finishes in 5th place and she has taken the title.
Yes! I love you guys.
And she has now managed to score points in all 30 races she has ever done in F1 Academy, and she has fully deserved becoming champion here today.
Just 9 points separated Dorian Pan and Maya Verg going into the season finale showdown. After Maya crashed out on the formation lap for race one, Dorian took full advantage with victory and fastest lap, and P5 in race two was then enough to seal the title by 20 points. I caught up with Dorian in the paddock and asked her how it sounds being called F1 Academy Champion 2025.
Sounds perfect. Really happy about being champion. Obviously, so much work behind it, and we are working to win races, to win championship, and we did it today, so very happy about this achievement. I'm thinking about how I started when I was 9. I couldn't believe it that I'm actually here today and being champion, so it feels amazing, and I want to thank everybody that has been involved since day one. They are part of this success, and definitely, yeah, we are a strong team, and we're strong together, so really happy.
Talking of together, you had a great posse in Parc Fermé. Tell me if I'm wrong, I saw Toto Wolff, I saw George Russell, Kimi Antonelli, Valtteri Bottas, even Stefano Domenicali as well, were all there to congratulate you.
Yeah, it's amazing to be part of this team. Obviously, they are being supporting me from day one. Such incredible feeling to celebrate all together, because they are so great, and they opened me so opportunities for my career that I would never have without them. So I'm really happy about achieving this first title all together, and obviously winning this amazing championship that has been well designed by Suzy, and we're so lucky to have this opportunity and this visibility for our career. So it's amazing, amazing feeling.
Can we talk about your approach this weekend? Because it's been a title showdown here in Las Vegas. How did you keep so cool? And what was your approach to the races themselves? You seem to be very, very aggressive.
Yeah, obviously we had to be there all the time, because if we are a bit lower, that's not the approach we had to have to win a championship. So definitely a full push from first lap of FP. We have been preparing so much this weekend, because Las Vegas was completely new for everyone at the beginning. So I knew we could make the difference also in that moment. So we actually did it. We race smart, we race aggressive, and we show that we are champion, and because we deserve it. So so I've been keeping calm, keeping full of focus from day one here to today. So really happy about the approach, my mindset, and how I feel throughout the weekend, because it's definitely not easy to be a contender for the championship, leading and be so tight in the championship with Maya, but we clearly being stronger the whole weekend compared to her, so we are champion and it's good.
You say it's not easy to be a championship contender, but if we look at your two seasons in F1 Academy, you've actually been a contender from the start. You've been a points finisher in all 30 races you've done in F1 Academy. Just tell us about the car, and you really seem to have hit the ground running with it at the start of last season, let alone this year.
Yeah, I've been working a lot last year, learning a lot about the car, about the team, about myself as well. Coming from endurance races, so it's completely different. So we have been improving so much throughout this year, and we are leading since the first race. But, you know, keeping the momentum, be there all the time and be competitive in every track for a full year is definitely not easy, because behind it's very competitive as well. So definitely a good feeling to achieve that today, and that's it. Yeah.
Many congratulations. Final one from me, just what's next? Enjoy the moment tonight, but have you any idea what 2026 holds?
Not yet, but we are champions, so we will have good discussion hopefully, and having a brilliant career, a very long one.
Very well done from all of us. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Great to hear from Dorianne, our 2025 F1 Academy champion. Huge congratulations to her again. Now, for more reaction and analysis of all the weekend's action here in Las Vegas, go to F1.com, the official F1 app, and at F1 on social media. You can also watch the race highlights on the F1 YouTube channel. So that's the third and final US race of the season done and dusted. And we'll be back in Miami next May, and you can get one-day grandstand tickets now from just $85. Just go to f1miamigp.com to get yours. Next up, the penultimate round of the 2025 season in Qatar, which also hosts the final F1 sprint of the year. And we'll be back on Thursday to preview that race. Thanks very much for listening. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audio Boom Studios.
Hey, it's Boxer.
And I'm Sarah Towns with Experience Columbus.
Did you know Columbus is home to the number one science museum in the country?
Ranked number 7 on Food & Wine's list of America's next great food cities.
And one of Condé Nast Traveler's top 10 best big cities in America.
Yes, Columbus. An Experience Columbus podcast keeps you in the know about what's happening in the Arch City.
Binge, listen to all the current episodes.
Or catch up on all things Columbus and discover what makes this city so special.
By the end, you'll be asking yourself, can all of this really exist in one city?
Yes, Columbus.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right.
Big news! Wayfair's Black Friday sale is here! Right now, get up to 80% off everything you need for the season ahead. Save on kitchen and dining, bedroom furniture and mattresses, seasonal decor, and way more. All at Wayfair. These are Wayfair's best deals of the year. From seasonal finds to favorites you'll use all year long. Plus, enjoy fast and free shipping with delivery in time for the holidays. Save up to 80% off during Wayfair's Black Friday sale. Now at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.